from Port Angeles, it's Todd Ortloff.
All right, welcome to the program. Got lots to cover in the first segment today. A little another play. Earlier this week, we talked about Anne of Green Gables over the high school. Well, across the way a little bit over at Peninsula College in the Little Theater. Going on at the same time is going to be the performance of The Bard Bears It All. And now that we've got your attention, that's the actual official name of this. Lara Starcevich is here. She's the instructor and this is a 101 class, right? Drama 101 up there that is putting this on. So, Lara, good to see you again.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And let's talk about what this play is all about. It's actually many plays in one, right?
It is. Yeah. We're doing several different scenes. Merchant of Venice, Othello, Midsummer Night's Dream. Several different plays all focused on the theme of love and power. Okay. And how even in, you know, like a play like Romeo and Juliet, it's about love and romance, but there's also elements of power and control and vice versa. In scenes that are more, you'd think they're more about power, there's still like intense love and passion between people. So it's looking at those themes as they are woven together.
Now, these scenes, are you going to be performing them in a traditional sense or a twist on them? How will people see these?
I would say timeless. Like it's not really locked to a certain time period. But the unique thing is we have several different directors involved, and each of them have their own particular directing style. So, like Anna Anderson is here today, and she has her unique vision that she brings to the table. And we also have Richard Stevens and Sandy Brown and Tia Stevens. So we've got four different directors, and the students get to learn from all of these different approaches.
And so for you as the instructor, I mean, this, because after all, this is a lab project more or less in a lot of ways. You get to put on a play, but you really are giving them students an experience as to how it would be in the real world, because every director is a little different.
They're all, very different. Yeah.
All right. So. The idea to do this, how'd you come up with the staging?
I don't know. I guess I've been teaching at the college for a while, and when you're a director, you know, you do it your way, and you know, your way or the highway or whatever. Like, and I'm done with that. You know, I want to learn from other people, and so it's fun. Like, I've learned a lot from.
We've had you on many times, and you've been the director, and I get it. You get this time to sit back, and I guess you get to be the true producer this time,
that's
right?
True.
Take that role.
Exactly.
Okay. We'll talk a bit more. We'll give you some of the details before we get out of here. Anna Anderson, let's talk with you first, and you are one of the directors.
Yes,
so what are you directing?
I'm directing a scene from A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay. Yes. So now Lara said that you have your own approach, so maybe you want to talk about that? What are you going to do?
Well, this is a Pyramus and Thisbe, which is a play within a play in A Midsummer Night's Dream. So it is the epitome of silly when it comes to Shakespeare. It is the silliest thing I think that he wrote. It's incredibly funny. So we just went with that. We're rolling with the humor.
You're going over the top with the humor then.
Yes, we are having a great time. Yeah.
How many actors do you have playing in
I've got six actors. Okay. All of them wonderful. Do you want to hear their names?
Sure. Sure. Rattle them off.
I got their first names. Michael Scott is one of them.
Robbie Williams.
Williams, yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Keegan.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Min.
Min and Messiah. Mm-hmm. Min is from Korea and Messiah is from Japan, and they're awesome.
Mm-hmm. So in casting this, I mean, what did you specific? I mean, do all these folks try out for each one of these plays?
Yes. We had a general audition at the beginning, and I had a pretty good idea of what I wanted. I am a Shakespeare girl. I'm the artistic director of the Shakespeare Festival at the Fine Arts Center. So I love Shakespeare. Midsummer was the first play I ever produced there, ever directed for the Shakespeare Festival. So it's very near to my heart. I knew immediately exactly who I wanted. Yeah. Let me say, other directors, it was a lot of like drawing straws.
I'm just kind of picturing this as like The Voice in a way, where you started trying to steal people from each other. At some point.
You know, we have Will here, and Will was in hot demand. And so I say I knew immediately, but I also knew I couldn't have Will.
Like, we had fist fights in the theater.
There was like a throwdown of times.
It got pretty hardcore, yeah. I have to say.
So you actually, and the good news for you is that you get to do one inside now. Literally yeah. an indoor production of this, right?
Yes, that's right. That is right.
Not to say that the outdoor isn't really pretty cool at the Fine Arts Center. So you're pretty excited about it. It's come
yes.
together.
Yes, you feeling good? I'm really pleased with them. As a matter of fact, okay. a couple like last week when they were rehearsing, I was kind of like, okay, my work mm-hmm. here is done. They're mm-hmm. amazing, yeah. and I'm just going to enjoy it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How is it, you know, for somebody to, you know, working with students like that? I mean, these are all very, they have a wide range of experience. Right. It's mm-hmm. a 101 class, so it's an entry-level class, but, you know, people usually get into these with, you know, some community theater maybe, or some other things, or maybe yeah. nothing at all.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I also run the theater program for Clown and Mosaic, which is for right. developmentally disabled people. So I do... One of the things I love is working with people of different abilities and trying to even out the play, even out yeah. the scene. It's really my favorite part.
All right. Most difficult part about this particular scene you've put together? Has it been something that was most trying or not? Or
this scene really went like a dream, I have to say.
All right.
Yeah.
It's okay. Honesty's great.
It's really been great. Yeah.
Nice for a director for a change, right? All right. Will Fleck is here. Will, let's talk about your involvement in this. You're a hot commodity actor in all of this, it sounds
apparently
like.
Apparently I am.
So tell us, what are you doing?
So in the actual production, I am Emilia in Othello, and I am also Cleopatra and Antony in Cleopatra. And that's about three scenes in total. Mm-hmm. Lots of lines.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
So what's your experience in theater?
I've been in the theater realm for about 5 years. Okay. I'm 17. I've been doing it since about eighth grade. And I've been everything from a palm tree to the fairy godmother. and so this has been a brand new experience, though, because I'm playing two very powerful women. Emilia, who I like to call the feminist icon of Shakespeare, and Cleopatra, who everyone knows is one of the most powerful yeah. women ever to have lived. And so it's been a very new experience bringing these women to life and doing them justice.
How difficult has it been? These are two pretty big, heavy parts. I mean, you got, mm-hmm. as you just said, lots of lines. Mm-hmm. Has it been?
It was difficult at first, but what's nice is I can see parts of myself in the characters, so I've really sunk into them. And then I'm also the head of costuming and makeup, and so I've also been like looking wow. for costumes for everyone else's plays and for my play, for the plays I'm in. And so it's been an amazing experience.
So do you have time for anything else right now? Because here you are kind of starring in two of these with big parts, and now you're putting a lot of the behind the scenes
yeah,
together.
Yeah, and I have two other classes on top of it. So my life has literally revolved around drama, and I'm wanting to be an actor when I'm older. So this is...
Well, this is trial by fire. Yeah, so you
exactly.
get to do it like the real guys, right?
Well, yeah,
yeah, this is like being a pro.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely been an amazing experience, and it's mm-hmm. all due to Lara, Anna, and everyone
yeah.
else.
Yeah, they're all.
For those who aren't, you know, because some people get really scared, and maybe I'll go back to Lara to kind of bring this full circle, but people get a little scared. They hear Shakespeare. Oh, this is heavy
yeah.
stuff. I'm not really. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
This sounds to me like this would be a great primer for somebody, I
yeah.
guess, maybe if they're not real familiar with Shakespeare.
We think of it as like a sampler play.
Oh, there you go. Right. No, seriously, yeah.
It's true. Right. Just little sort of tastes of each play. And in case people aren't as familiar, there's a little prep, you know, in the mm-hmm. program, a little synopsis. But really, like, these are... the scenes themselves stand on their own. Like, they don't need that much of an introduction, I don't think. And I think the way that the actors perform and the way the directors have directed the scenes, it's really clear what's happening. And it's really intense, like mm-hmm. in a comedic sense, but also in a serious sense. Like, I think we've also tried to do is pull certain scenes that you don't see as much. For instance, like Romeo and Juliet, right. everyone knows the balcony scene, but we're not doing that one. So, like, we're trying to also give people a glimpse into some of them
sure.
lesser known, like Antony and Cleopatra. We're doing a scene from that, which you don't see that produced as often. So it's a little sampler, sampler plate.
Well, are you excited?
Yeah, I'm super excited. And as someone who hasn't seen a lot of Shakespeare, I did used to go to Shakespeare in the Park in like Seattle when I was like really little. But as someone who now is like kind of engrossing myself into it, it's been really interesting because I'm like, Midsummer Night's Dream, now I want to watch the entire production. Antony and Cleopatra, it's been fascinating. So from someone who hasn't seen much, it's really intrigued me to go look at other Shakespeare works. And I'm really excited because the amount of love and just hard work and determination put into this play, it's even just watching my friends do their scenes, it's like beautiful because they're embodying the characters, they're getting it down. Romeo and Juliet is coming together so beautifully. Midsummer Night's Dream, you don't want to miss it. Like, all of them are just so phenomenal. And if you miss this production, you're going to be missing out on a lot. So,
well, it certainly is a great place to see it, too. Peninsula College's little theater is a wonderful little theater, hence the name. So, Laura, the nuts and bolts, you open up next week, right?
Yeah, next Friday. So November 22nd, 23rd, that Friday and Saturday. Then the we skip the Thanksgiving weekend and then December 6th and 7th. So it's all at 7:30. It's free admission. It's open to the public. There's even a matinee, if people prefer that, on Wednesday, December 4th at 12:30.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And you can't beat the price, right? Yeah. Shakespeare for free, right?
Exactly.
Well, congratulations. It sounds like it's going to be a great play. We'll have to get up there and check it out. Opens not this Friday. It'll be a week from tomorrow.
Yeah.
And they always great productions. Laura's always done good ones up there. So, thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you very much.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with a bit from the Clallam County Sheriff's Department, some people related to some things going on with them right after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
Habitat for Humanity is excited to host the first ever holiday tour of homes, December 6th and 7th. Join friends and neighbors to get a private guided tour of four exquisitely decorated holiday homes. Participants of the tour will meet at a starting location and be bused to the homes on tour. Tickets for this fun night out are on sale now at Brown Paper Tickets. All proceeds support Habitat of Clallam County. Get into the holiday spirit and help a good cause. Log on to brownpapertickets.com and search Holiday Tour of Homes for more details.
I'm going to pull into Fairmount Grocery to get some gas.
Okay, I'm going to get a coffee.
Give me a large mocha.
Okay.
And a Twinkie.
What are you, 4 years old?
Come on, Fairmount Grocery has all kinds of stuff. In fact, we're going to be on the road a while. Better grab some pizza things from the deli, too. And might as well get some... What? Oh, you'll probably need some help carrying all that.
You think?
Oh, okay. I'm right behind you.
Come get your share of the good stuff at Fairmount Grocery, West 101.
Gather on the Thanksgiving table this year at the Red Lion Hotel and enjoy a feast inside the Port Angeles Crab House restaurant. Make reservations for your family to dine on brown sugar sage roasted turkey breast or pork tenderloin, each served with cranberry chutney and roasted apple stuffing. And that's just the beginning. Enjoy pancetta, scalloped potatoes, sweet potato casserole with toasted marshmallow and pecan streusel, cheddar chive biscuits, fresh baked breads, homemade pies, and much, much more. The Red Lion's Crab House restaurant serves all of this for only $32 for adults with special discounts for seniors and kids. Make reservations now at 360-457-0424 and make it a Thanksgiving you'll never forget at the Port Angeles Crab House restaurant overlooking the waterfront right inside the Red Lion Hotel.
Many of our terrific local businesses advertise on KONP. We ask them, how's it working out?
When I've got something to promote, KONP is the first call I make.
We have been advertising for over 25 years with KONP, and it's been great. I get personal feedback. I know people are listening.
It's immediate results.
People in the community know the people that are talking on the radio personally. They recognize their faces as well as their voices. So I think having that connection within the community is what makes the radio a really good avenue for us advertising.
The radio's been really effective for us. When our customers come in, you can kind of ask them, you know, how'd you get here or why'd you come? A lot of them say, oh, I listen to the radio. And so radio's been very effective for us. And so that's why we use it.
Reach your customers on the radio, wherever they are. Give us a call and let's talk. It's easy, economical, and kind of fun. Call 457-1450. Watch your business grow with KONP Radio.
Right, in our next couple of segments, we're going to be talking with folks related to law enforcement here locally, specifically the Clallam County Sheriff's Office, and also the Lower Elwha Clallam Tribal Police Department. Going to, in a minute, talk about the relatively new chief of police for the Lower Elwha. Sammy White will join us here in a minute. But first, we're going to talk to Bill Benedict, Clallam County Sheriff, a bit about kind of what we plan to cover here. May have seen some news late in the last few days about partnerships, I guess you might call it, and cross-deputization and things like that. And that's one of the things I know we'll chat about. So, Bill, welcome. First of all,
Thanks for coming in.
And I guess I'll just ask you this question, because I know you've brought this up before. In an area like we are here, you become kind of reliant on relationships with other agencies. And that means
exactly.
There's just not enough of your staff, for example, to cover everything.
Well, as the public has an expectation that if there is an emergency situation or whatever, and they dial 911, that someone is going to respond quickly. And what we've done over time is that, for example, the number of deputies that I have right now, full-time deputies, it's the same number as what we had in 1992. Now, if someone really pushes me on it, I think we might have two more than we did then. And that number that we had in 1992 was increased by six, and that number we had goes back to the days when Harley Bishop was sheriff, and in 1976 is when Harley Bishop, the county went to 24-hour coverage, and that was with 24 deputies. We now have 37 deputies. So that, and that's been in right. over 50 years.
And the county, believe it or not, it's grown a bit since then.
So anyway, it has. In fact, the population has almost tripled. It's 2.5 times since 1976. At any rate, we've always had a very close working relationship with the Lower Elwha tribe. However, and we actually had a cross-deputization program that was ended under Sheriff Haw, and Sue Ellen was asking me, I don't remember but it fell apart actually during the McCaw whaling. There was a number of Native American issues that came up, and I think if my memory serves me, I think that Sheriff Haw walked away from the agreement. And one of the first things I wanted to do when I was elected 13 years ago was to reinstitute that. And between inertia on both sides, it took us a while, but we're there.
Yeah, and certainly, and we'll talk with the new chief in a moment, but there have been changes in his department, too, that
Absolutely.
You know, have kind of probably pushed this along to a point now where there's a little bit of stability, and I'll use that word kind of loosely as to, because it does take people that are going to be there for a bit to sit down and have an agreement. Some people, Bill, are I'm sure they get uncomfortable when they hear about these types of agreements, thinking that, okay, what does this really mean for me as Joe Citizen? If I'm a Clallam County resident and a Lower Elwha police officer, you know, what on the street does this equate when you have an agreement like this?
That's a great question, and I brought backup for that.
Okay.
I'm going to defer to my chief criminal deputy, Brian King, who was in the midst of negotiating the fine points, and he will explain.
Then we'll do that. Brian King, good to have you. Thanks for coming down.
Let's start.
Yeah, that's the question. What does this really mean for the, you know, average citizen on the street?
Well, I think what it really means is an increase in public safety. And, you know, our deputies are spread thin, and they're spread clean across the county. And when there's an opportunity for a resident that lives near the reservation to have a police officer and get a police officer quickly, they may see that officer be a Lower Elwha officer. Deputies will be in tow. We'll be there as soon as we possibly can. But it's really about increasing public safety.
And so this really does affect, you know, county residents who are around the reservation. I think a lot of people may misinterpret the agreement as that you're going to have tribal police officers, you know, just basically doing what would be sheriff's deputies work all over the place,
yeah,
and vice versa.
The public as a whole is not going to see any difference in business as usual. And that's what we really want to stress is that, you know, we've been operating like this for quite a long time. This really codifies an agreement that we really needed for a long time.
And why is that? I mean, and I think that's a good point, is that there's always been kind of a mutual aid agreement, if you will, almost a gentleman's agreement. Nothing that's been written down.
Absolutely. And the challenges that we have faced without this agreement is it dives down into whether detentions are lawful. And when we proceed with a case through the system, is there going to be some technicality that arises? This really erases some of those technicalities that we faced in the past.
All right. I'm going to just have you explain for us as we head to the break, just when a felony is committed on the reservation by someone who belongs there or not belongs there. Tell me how jurisdiction works, I guess, when we get into law that is tribal law.
Sam, as a tribal law enforcement officer, has jurisdiction over all tribal members. The sheriff's department still has jurisdiction over all non-tribal members. And so we still have to respond.
On the reservation,
investigate the incident. As a benefit to Sam, you know, Sam's the closest, always going to be the closest to those events. He's going to get there. He's going to call us once he's made the scene safe, and we're going to come in and take care of business. In reciprocity, Sam may need our assistance. He may have, you know, one or two officers on, and now he's got three major events going. He's going to call upon us to come down and take care of one of those events until he's free and able to come and deal with the situation.
We talked about detaining folks. How does that work? I think with a codified agreement like this, all of a sudden, if Sam's folks show up at a scene and need to detain someone, they'll be able to do that. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Okay. So, for example, there is a rollover accident on Edgewood Drive, and you have a DUI driver that may be trying to flee the scene. Sam's closest, or Sam's folks are going to be closest. They're the first ones that are there. They're going to recognize that the driver is impaired. They're going to be able to hold that driver there without any current concerns or jurisdictional issues until we arrive. And so we can still proceed with a successful prosecution.
But without a codified agreement like that, there can be a technicality in it. Someone could make an argument that says, well, wait a minute, that's not jurisdictionally
absolutely
appropriate.
And it's happened before, and we've lost cases because of that. Ultimately, you know, public safety is our first priority, but we also want to hold people accountable for their actions. And this gives us a greater ability to do that.
And I think that also flips as well. If you get called as a deputy down to the reservation and it's a tribal issue, you will have some detention authority at that point until tribal officials get there. How does that
Correct.
Work?
Okay. It's that same, all within that same agreement.
All right. Very well. We're going to take a break. When I come back, we're going to meet the new chief of the Lower Elwha Tribal Police, Sam White, and we'll talk about some of these same things from his perspective and what it means and some things going on in his department, because there's been some good big changes that have happened over the last few months. When we come back, as we continue to talk with Bill Benedict, sheriff here in Clallam County, Brian King, who you just heard from, he's the chief criminal deputy, and we'll talk with the Lower Elwha Tribal Police Chief Sam White right after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
Do you love to dance? Do you love live music? If that's what you're looking for, mark Saturday, November 16th on your calendar for Chapter 5 at Seven Cedars Casino. A mix of dance, R&B, funk, hip-hop, and rock is what they'll bring to Club 7 at 9 o'clock. From Marvin Gaye to Cameo, Seal to Naughty by Nature, Chapter 5 is a mix of all your favorites. Expect classic songs done with a contemporary groove. Get the gang together and plan on being at Seven Cedars Casino on November 16th for Chapter 5. For more information about this and other upcoming events, visit SevenCedarsResort.com.
Radio KONP and the Perangeles Lion Club team up for the annual Foodathon to raise money and food for the Perangeles Food Bank November 21st. The Lions take over KONP from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and will encourage listeners to call in pledges of cash or food and challenge others to do the same. Join us for a wild and crazy radio day November 21st, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. here on KONP. Be ready for the Foodathon and give as much as you can.
180 over 111, and I had a stroke.
I couldn't speak or walk.
150 over 90, and I had a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a stroke are far from silent. Get back on your treatment plan or talk with your doctor to create a plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
In California, two teenagers are dead, police say, ages 16 and 14, following the mass shooting at the Saugus High School in Santa Clarita, California. Four others in the hospital. The suspect, also a student, is said to be in grave condition. Sheriff's homicide captain Kent Wegner says that male student took a handgun from his backpack and opened fire on classmates before turning the gun on himself.
The weapon that he used was recovered at the scene. It's a .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol, which had no more rounds in it.
Police say that they reviewed surveillance tape at the school. Wegner says the suspect has not been identified yet publicly, and his birthday is said to have been today. Police have not publicly identified that suspect or the victims. The shooting happened when students were arriving for preschool activities early this morning. Lockdowns in place at area schools now lifted, with parents being reunited with their loved ones. I'm Michelle Franz in ABC News.
Here is your AccuWeather forecast. This afternoon, considerable cloudiness with a little late rain, high 51. Periods of rain tonight, low 45. Mainly cloudy tomorrow with some rain, high 54. Mostly cloudy tomorrow night, low 42. For Saturday, cloudy with a bit of rain in the afternoon, high 49. Considerable cloudiness for Saturday night with occasional late rain, low 46. For AccuWeather, I'm Cheryl Golden.
Back with more. We're talking about a new agreement that is being drafted up and put together between the Clallam County Sheriff's Office and the Lower Elwha Tribal Police Department, which really is a cross-deputization between those two departments so that they can share some resources. I guess before we get to the chief here, I should ask either Brian or Bill, is it done, has this been signed yet? Where are we at? What's status on this?
No, it is going to be signed by the commissioners next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
And okay. It will be, it's been staffed, but I believe that the tribal council will vote on it and sign it early December.
December 2nd.
Okay. December 2nd.
So this is, it's within a couple of weeks then. Right, this is going to be done. All right. Sam White's here. He is the, and I won't call you the new chief. You've been there since February, but relatively new. First time we've had you here. So welcome as well to the program.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Let's talk just a bit of how you got to that position. What brought you to Port Angeles?
Well, first and foremost, I was born and raised in Port Angeles. Yeah. I, Lower Elwha Clallam Tribal member, went to school here and grew up my whole entire life. From there, I got into law enforcement. I was hired by the Lower Elwha Tribe about 23 years ago. Worked from there from patrol all the way to sergeant, and at that time, that was second in command. At the same time while I was doing that, I was teaching at the Basic Police Academy over in Seattle as a defensive tactics instructor, use of force, patrol procedures, mm-hmm. and things like that as a contract vendor. When I left Lower Elwha, I went out to Nia Bay as the chief of police for just under 4 years, was the chief of police out there, and then transferred to Suquamish as a sergeant and spent 4 years over in at the Suquamish tribe, working patrol and managing a crew of officers there. Opportunity came up for me to move over to Port Gamble, and I had that opportunity. I moved over to Port Gamble as the chief of police over there and spent the last 4 years. I've always been home-based out of Port Angeles. I've lived here in the county my entire life, and I wanted to come home, and the timing was right for me to come back home. They advertised the position, and then I managed to be selected for it, and I'm happy to be back.
Well, welcome home, and a lot less miles commuting to all these other things you were doing, I know, over the years.
So yeah.
I get that. Let's talk about your department, and we'll get to that in a moment, I guess. Let's talk about this agreement that we've been chatting about, and I want to kind of get the perspective from the tribal side of things, how this is helpful for the Lower Elwha.
From the tribal side, it changes a little bit, but for the most part, it changes how much exposure we have on the road as far as civil liability and our partnerships with the county. You know, me and Bill, he's been here as long as I've been in law enforcement, and started when I was a rookie. He was showing me the ropes a lot of the time. So based on that history, you know, we've always worked very, very well at the road level, but having a codified agreement allows protections to both the county and to the Lower Elwha officers when they're out there enforcing or just detaining somebody, holding them over so they can turn them over. It makes it more legal and less challengeable in court cases.
All right. How many officers do you typically have on duty at any given time?
We generally run a day shift in a graveyard.
Yeah.
And that's it. One per shift at this point in time. We're currently working our way back up to full staff. We're down 4 officers on the road right now.
Wow. Wow. So you're thin. I mean, it's thin for you guys.
We are very thin. We're rebuilding from the ground up, and it's been a very hard process to get the department back up to staff, because we meet all the same standards that the county sheriff has to meet. We have to do all the physical fitness, the psychological, the polygraph, the oral boards, fingerprints, all the same process that is involved in pre-screening an employee is the same process for Clallam County, for PA, for Lower Elwha. It's the same process because every officer has to be registered with the Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission as a certified police officer. And that standard is the same for everybody in the state that has
tribal or not, right?
Tribal or not. Right. And so to get an officer registered with CJTC to be under the special commission, they have to meet these standards.
And then you also, as a tribal officer, have to have the added nuance of learning all about tribal law additionally, which is a whole nother set of things, isn't it?
Yeah. So after if they make it through the entire screening process, which takes a couple months to get somebody from point A to point B, and that's just getting them into the door, then from there they go to training. And for us, we sign them up for both the state academy and the federal academy at the same time, and whichever academy opens up first is usually the federal academy. The waiting list for the tribe is for tribal officers to get in there is more extensive than getting them into the federal academy. We send them there. The state CJTC is the governing board, recognizes the federal academy as a certified academy. But to get once they graduate from the Indian Police Academy and come back to our agency, we still have to send them to another academy called the Equivalency Academy, where they learn all. It primarily teaches state law.
Right.
And so when they graduate that, they get what's called a Tribal Peace Officer Certificate through the state of Washington.
So technically, your officers have to take more training in a way. Right?
In a way.
Yeah.
It's a lot longer drawn-out process.
So I asked Brian King the same question about jurisdictional matters. Explain to me about, you know, arrests made, investigations, how they are handled on the reservation, because there's some real interesting nuances. Who's in charge?
There are three different levels of jurisdiction. If it's tribal member on tribal member, it's sole Lower Elwha tribal jurisdiction. If it's a non-tribal member, as the suspect, then it's solely the county's jurisdiction. However, we also run into, if they commit a felony that violates federal law, then we also have the introduction of the FBI that may assume jurisdiction on some cases as well.
How does that really affects things even as you're out on the scene of a crime, right?
You have to know what you're dealing with.
Yeah. So I could see that. Maybe Brian can jump in on this as well. Will this require a little extra training for your folks so that they're fully up to speed on kind of what that nuance is if they end up?
No, very little additional training, because really we are doing much of what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
And so it's more about talking about processes, you know, that are actually in the agreement as far as notifications. I mean, we've really made it very clear in this process that if I'm exercising my tribal authority, or if Sam's folks are exercising their state authority under this agreement, then we're going to be making notifications to one another right. Immediately.
And it does sound, Sam, like ultimately jurisdiction's going to take care of itself, maybe, or at least when an arrest is made. I mean, you may have a deputy do a hold, but ultimately it's going to become a tribal. If it needs to be a tribal thing, your guys are going to be there to kind of take over, I guess,
and vice versa.
Right,
and it does make the partnership work, but we're already doing all of this. We have been since 1996, been working very, very well together. It just gives us a lot more protection and a little bit more guidance in a codified relationship.
And I would think in your specific case, too, as you're rebuilding a department, this is quite helpful. I mean, knowing that there's actually some backup that can take care of things. Because, in law enforcement, things don't just come in ones. They come in threes and fives and things like that, right?
Yes. Yeah. When we do run into problems, we can go a very long time without having any major incident. And it almost feels like it comes in waves over the entire county. You can almost hear it coming as the calls come in.
Exactly. Bill?
I just want to add, though, that it's a three-way partnership. Port Angeles Police Department, and by the way, this was something that Chief Smith worked on. They have the cross-deputization in right. place, and they have had that in place for, I want to say, 4 or 5 years. So the fact matters is that all three agencies, we all know each other, and I would add it could just as easily be a Port Angeles city cop that could assist on the reservation. And for those out in the county, just outside the county line or outside the city limits, could have a Port Angeles police officer right. respond, just like city residents could have a deputy or now an LWA cop respond in an exigent or emergency situation.
Brian, how often is that happening right now? I mean, just in saying that, I live right outside the city limits, for example. I could see where...
It happens daily.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just the relationship that we all have. It can be that, staffing-wise, we're not much different than Sam is oftentimes when he starts to do that. For example, we have two deputies out on the road in the Port Angeles area right now, and those deputies may be east of Port Angeles, and now we have an event out, let's say, near Joyce. Well, we're really, really going to look at, the most efficient way to get from point A to point B and weigh the nature of the emergency with, like, hey, Sam, we need you to get out there and help us deal with this. And it's really, again, I can't stress enough, and while I know that there's some concern over this agreement that's out there, this is really about public safety.
Bill, is there any financial exchange of dollars in any sense in this, or is this just straight up?
No, this is now... This isn't to say that if we have some unusual occurrence that we would help each other out, but that would be, quite honestly, above all of our pay grades. That would be between, for example, the commissioners and the and the tribal council, if it came to that. But it's unlikely, and it hasn't come up in the past.
Back to you, Sam. Let's talk a bit about your department. I mean, you mentioned you're kind of building it up at this point. So where are things? What's next for you out there?
When I got back, I got a chance to evaluate the agency, and I restructured it. Went from a lieutenant sergeant patrol, went to a two-sergeant system so that we can provide 24-hour coverage at full staff, where we'll run three officers, day shift, swing shift, graveyard, with a supervising sergeant over each shift. It'll be Team A and Team B, and that'll get us to 24-hour coverage, sergeant to be able to backfill anybody that comes in sick or has gone to training. Mm-hmm. And that's the design that model with that I can do the best with the amount of staff that I have to provide 24-hour coverage. The next portion was looking at our processes and stuff. So I implemented a new policy and procedure manual, and that policy guides the agency on its what it can and cannot do and training standards, hiring standards, and all those kind of things. We implemented that. It was adopted and approved by tribal council, and it was one of the first things I did because you need a solid policy and procedure manual to manage a police department. Right. And then from there, we're looking at our facilities and trying to reestablish the building as a training center. Not only has it got the court and the $3 million invested into the building, but we also have a whole downstairs that is underutilized right now that eventually will become back, come back to being a training center where you got a classroom, and also in our partnerships, looking at doing cross training, providing training out of that facility as well.
Do you have a timeline? I mean, what's your goal? I guess you want to get this done in a year, 2 years, 5 years. What do you?
My goal for the training center, as far as like getting something like just TVs up, whiteboards, simple logistic things, is by the end of the year, is that the classroom portion itself will be functional and ready to go. The other part of the training room, which is where you can do defensive tactics and CPR, you have the room to use the floor and mats and areas such as for doing those kind of training is also my goal is to have it done by the end of the year.
Oh, all right. So what's call volume for your department? I mean, what do you guys usually, and maybe give me a flavor as to what is a typical call for the tribal officers these days?
You know, the call volume fluctuates. I want to say it was between around, 3,000 calls for the whole year. But the typical is barking dogs, theft, the same calls that you would get in any other jurisdiction. We do occasionally have our high crime incidents, but they're few and far between. Yeah. And county does a great job of responding when we need help, and we've had the feds out a couple times in this last year, so those come very few and far between, but they do happen.
All right. It's great having you. Thanks, Sam, for coming in, and I think we'll have to have you back as you continue to build up the department out there, because it sounds like you've got quite a few things in motion right now at the Tribal Police Office.
Yes, we do, and thank you for having me here.
All right. Bill, just a final thought or two about this. This is going to be codified as well. Are there other similar agreements in the works or not? Well, do you need more of these types, I guess?
Yes and yes. Okay. We for Jamestown Sklallam Tribe, we provide them there, the law enforcement, although they do have three officers that are essentially trained enough that they can back us up and actually perform primary law enforcement duties. I would like to see this pact, if you will, extended to the Macaw and the Quileute. We have good relationships with both tribes, and we would like to extend. One of the things I'd like to do is both the roads that go into Macaw, what's that, 112, and what's the 110 into
La Push.
I would like to extend cross commissioning and have tribal officers enforce traffic at least out 3 or 4 or 5 miles outside of the reservations. Because those are safety areas and huge areas of complaints, and we just don't
have. And you don't have staff to get out there and do that.
And neither does the State Patrol, for that matter. So, and we can expect, one of the direct things is that Sammy's going to have to build up, get fully staffed, but people can expect to see tribal officers working radar on Lower Elwha Road as well as Stratton Road, and keeping the speeders in check.
All right. On that note, great conversation. Very interesting. Thanks, Bill. Good to see you again.
Well, thank you.
As always, Brian King, thank you for coming in as well. It's good
Thanks
to have
for
you.
Having
here. And Sam, thank you, too.
Thanks for having
it.
Me.
All right, we'll take a break, wrap things up right after this.
Wine nights at Seven Cedars Casino are just what you need for a relaxing evening of social time with friends, or just a glass or two and dinner with your special someone. Every Monday at the House of Seven Brothers, starting at 4 p.m., enjoy half-price wines and an 8-ounce prime rib for just $25, or $18 for Rewards Club members. Take in the extensive wine list and enjoy a great ambiance in the House of Seven Brothers. And maybe you'll even get lucky in the casino after dinner. Make it a Seven Cedars outing with Wine Night every Monday. For more information, visit sevencedarsresort.com.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything.
They really appreciate what she's done as a sister as well as a soldier and, you know, supporting their country.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join. Family members that are soldiers in the Army National Guard inspire and influence, setting a path for others.
It's validating knowing that, you know, I kind of did my part to make sure this is what they actually wanted and that they feel the same way I do. I'm really proud that we get to help shape the future, and I know that my sisters are going to be amazing soldiers.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share in.
A lot of pride, and they're just out there doing something every day and then serving their country as well.
I got my education because of the Guard. I got to travel a little bit and experience a whole different culture.
Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Washington Army National Guard. Aired by the Washington State Association of Broadcasters and this station.
And finally this afternoon, a Northern California football team has become a beacon of hope for a town still recovering from tragedy. Paradise High School's team put the finishing touches on an undefeated regular season as the city of Paradise marks a year since the campfire. It killed 86 people before it was finally contained in late November last year, and it also nearly wiped out the town. Tom Rinaldi with ESPN spoke with students, coaches, and other residents at the beginning of the season, discussing how the Paradise Bobcats made their comeback.
170 miles north of San Francisco, alone atop a ridge in the Sierra Nevadas, Paradise, California. In 2018, Paradise went 8-2 in the regular season. The Bobcats were headed to the playoffs with a chance to add to their trophy case.
We knew that we were going to be good 100%.
November 8th, 2018, the day of the first playoff game for Paradise.
I woke up, I took my son to school, and I saw the smoke. And then the sky changed, and everything around us turned red.
Fire rescue.
Hello, I'm calling about fire and smoke and orange glow in the sky.
First thought.
My first thought, I said it, get out. Get in the car and go.
Just after 8 a.m., in near pitch darkness, the entire town of Paradise was ordered to evacuate. Thousands at the same time were now trying to escape down the hill from Paradise to nearby Chico, many by a single road.
It looked like hell. I thought I was gonna die.
At what point did you feel like we're clear?
Once we got past the Paradise sign, which was already on fire.
By the time it began to slow that night, the campfire, as it would be called, would be the most destructive wildfire in California history.
Everything burned. Everything was gone.
How many players and coaches were impacted and touched by the fire?
All but three players lost their homes, and all but two coaches lost their homes. We had a game that night, playoff game.
What ultimately did you decide?
We decided to end the season.
Though the fire was over, Paradise's journey had just begun. In January, when school resumed, classes were held in a warehouse in Chico, 19 miles away. Enrollment, once nearly 1,000 students, fell by more than half.
They're spread out all over the place. We even have families going to Texas. We are displaced all over this nation right now.
Yet for all that was lost on November 8th, 2018, one piece of Paradise remained virtually untouched.
Here we are at our stadium, and it looks pretty normal.
Somehow, Paradise High and its home field were intact. The prospects for a football season in 2019, how do you describe them?
We're going to have one.
Why? Why does it matter?
I want to make sure that the kids that come to our school have a football program that they can be proud of.
And so, the boys from Paradise would begin their odyssey, hoping to reach a new season. Training in the warehouse and on a field outside.
Jacob Duncan, you here?
They started with just 22 varsity players. Their goal, to be able to play their opening game at home in Paradise.
Dip that shoulder. Good, good dip. Good.
There's been a lot of changes, a lot of things going on, but we're still going to put on our helmets. We're going to put on our shoulder pads. And we're going to rock people. And if we're a little bit angry about our situation, all the better.
Captain Lucas Hartley addressed the team.
I thought after the fire and everything that it was going to be the last season I played for Paradise High. And believe it or not, it made me so happy to know I had an opportunity to come out here and play with you guys. I'm sorry. I love you guys.
They thought you were down. They thought you were weak. They thought you couldn't fight back. You know what I got to say to that? Hell no! Oh.
9 months, 2 weeks, and 1 day after their season was ended by the campfire, the boys from Paradise returned to their field, to that patch of soil they call home.
Harley, number 20.
They played for more than a win. They played for a chance to show the 5,000 in attendance what had risen from the ashes.
People always say you don't miss something till it's gone, and then you miss it like hell. I love that community with everything.
Here's what I pray for you tonight, that you started a healing that's going to continue through the rest of the season. Doggone it, you guys, you've been through so much. This feels great.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
Your community-minded friends at First Federal bring you the Community Corner, highlighting good things happening right here in our area.
Hi, I'm Abby Sill, and I'm the graphic designer at First Federal. I love living here because my family is here and has been for four generations. My granddad was born where the Y is now, my mom went to Lincoln School, and I was born and raised here. I love working at First Federal because I'm given space to create, and my opinion is respected as an artist. I'm given projects that are helpful to the community, allowing me to give back to this community in my own way.
First Federal, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Join us on the radio Thursday, November 21st for the annual KONP Port Angeles Lions Radio-a-thon to benefit the Port Angeles Food Bank. On that day, Lions members will be on the air asking for your donation of cash and non-perishable food items. This is one of the food bank's largest food and fundraisers of the year, so it's important that we all give. During the holiday season, let's remember those in our community who struggle to put food on the table. They need the assistance of the food bank. We need you. Tune in and be ready with your contribution during the annual Radio-a-thon to benefit the Port Angeles Food Bank on Thursday, November 21st. The generosity of this community is always amazing. Thanks from the Port Angeles Lions and KONP.
Community Corner on KONP, presented by First Federal.
News on air and online at